Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Tronny Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trev.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Nakari, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know, BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from, and to all our traditional owners across this daily country of ours, welcome back to National Talk Black. Have you say your mob, yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416. We're going to jump straight in. We're going to have a chat now with beautiful Fern Newcomb from Murra Law, solicitor at Murra Law. And topic today is Human Rights Month. That's what it is, 2020, the year it was. We're going to catch up a yarn. Here she is. Fern, good morning, sis. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Trev. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for coming to the program.
Thanks for having
yes,
me.
Yeah, great. So we are human beings and we all got rights, and that's topic today. Well, every human has rights. Queensland Human Rights Month 2020. So celebration.
Yeah. Well, so the Queensland Human Rights Commission run an annual campaign every year from the 10th of November to the 10th of December, mm-hmm. where they highlight sort of the importance of protecting and promoting human rights. So this year's campaign is especially significant for us in Queensland, as 2020 is the year that the first year that we've had a human rights protections written into our law.
Okay, what law?
On January 1st of this year, the Queensland Human Rights Act 2019 came into full effect. Now, we've obviously had quite a few other things happening this year that have probably prevented proper examination of the provisions mm-hmm. and potential uses of this piece of legislation. keeping silent on COVID. The Act. So this Act protects two rights drawn from the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. Education Health Services, which protects one right from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is a property right. Yep. But its primary focus, 19 out of the 23 rights protected, is on protection of civil and political rights drawn from the United Nations International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Mm-hmm. This is a covenant which Australia is a ratifier, so it means they've signed the document. The UNICCPR was adopted in December 1966 and has been in force since March 1976.
A length of time? What are we talking there?
Why the length of time? Well, the ICCPR is part of public international law. Unfortunately, public international law is one of those sort of grey areas where its regulations and guidelines can kind of go largely ignored. Mm-hmm. Like, even when a country has sort of rocked up to the covenant or declaration signing, has ratified the document or agreement, if that country doesn't go back to its own borders and enact those laws domestically, the ratification or agreement doesn't really have any substantive value.
A Clayton deal, so to speak. Clayton law.
Yeah, exactly. A Clayton law. So essentially, this means prior to 2004, when the ACT introduced the first human rights legislation into this nation, no one in Australia could show up to a court or go to any ombudsman or government body to complain about breaches of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Mm-hmm. So as it stands here now in this country, there's the Human Rights Act 2004 from the ACT, the Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities Act from 2006 in Victoria, and the Human Rights Act 2019, which is our Queensland Act, and they're all state acts.
So federal act, whether need one or have one, etc.
So the issue is with the three state acts is that the respective state parliaments can just sort of change the legislation whenever they want. So it's led to different commentators and stakeholders to say that this sort of means that they're soft laws, just like you said, the Clayton laws.
Sure, exactly, exactly.
Yeah, and so there's calls for there to be a federal human rights legislation which is similar to our constitution. So the like the human rights protections that can only be changed by public referendum.
Okay. Yeah.
So the flip side of this coin is also an argument where narrowing human rights in this way is bad as well, because we might end up in a situation where we have legislation that is exceptionally difficult to change. We all know how, you know, difficult it is to change constitution.
Exactly.
But that in practice doesn't actually work the way we thought it would. And also, as we were speaking about before, where you end up with, in a situation where potentially a corporation could be being protected because it's an individual as well, you know, in the eyes of the law.
We're talking about individual human beings.
Not corporation. Yeah. So you need to be really careful about how you're writing these
things. How you word things,
Especially if it's you're going to put it into a piece of legislation that's really hard to change. You need to make sure it's, like, spot on. So the issue would be that we didn't expressly define the human... expressly define them in such a rigid way, if something important gets left out or if it doesn't work in the way it was supposed to, that we meant to leave it out, or it was meant for it was meant to work that way, or it's really difficult to change even if it's stupid.
Yeah.
Like, even if it ends up with, like, ridiculous outcomes.
Well, it's difficult to know what is right.
Yeah, it's difficult to know which one to do. So, but there is an upside for First Nations people. For the Queensland Human Rights Act, it does have a really great provision in Section 28 where it explicitly protects the cultural rights of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is really great. What this means...
Long time waiting.
Yeah. Only 200, over 200 years.
250-odd years. The white sails come.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's put rules in.
Yeah.
Wait first.
Yeah. What this means is that each arm of the government, of the governing parts of this nation, which are the courts, parliament and sort of public government entities like state schools, police, government departments, non-government entities if they're performing a government kind of function, they've got to act compatibly with these human rights, which means that sort of each of these bodies, organisations mentioned must consider Section 28 when performing its functions. Unfortunately, it's such a new act that a lot of the provisions of the Human Rights Act Queensland haven't been litigated yet in court, and Section 28 is one of those provisions. So we don't really have...
So it's not in blood yet, is it?
Yeah, well, we don't really have any information about how it will actually work in practice and sort of around, with regard to enforcement, but it is a really good thing to keep in the back of your mind. Even when we're writing contracts and stuff, for example, or negotiating terms of an agreement, we include a reference to Section 28 in most of our contracts.
Okay,
particularly
if something raises its ugly head, you've got support and protection there.
Yeah, in the actual document that's governing the relationship between you and the other person.
Hey, so go a mile, see a mile. See as you go, so to speak, down the track.
Yeah,
if we
exactly.
hit that pothole, then we've got the, how you said, the bitumen in the back of the truck will just fill in that pothole as we go. Trying to just paint the picture regarding the journey ahead, you know?
Exactly.
So more information there?
So the Queensland Human Rights Commission have a fantastic resource on their website, have fantastic resources, many, on their website relating to Human Rights Month. That they're at qhrc.qld.gov.au/resources/Human Rights Month 2020 with dashes in between each of those words.
Yes.
Or you can call them on 1300 130 670, which isn't a free call, bear in mind. You can also make a complaint there at that website if you think anyone's breached any of these of these rights.
Yep.
Same qhrc.qld.gov.au/complaints.
Complaints.
Yeah.
Okay, lovely.
So the Queensland Government website also has a section for government employees where they can look up resources to enable them to comply with the Human Rights Act. And any business owners or employers could always adopt this for other organisations' use, could adopt these sort of these resources. And that's at www.forgov.qld.gov.au/human rights.
Human rights.
And as always, you can call us if you need some commercial or native title advice, and you can also get more information from your local law society in Queensland. That is the Queensland Law Society, and their number is 1300 367 757. Other states have got corresponding law societies. You just have to look them up.
Okay, fantastic. Otherwise, contact you guys at Murra Law. And who's Murra Law, Fern?
Murra Law is the nation's leading independent Indigenous legal firm that specialises in commercial and Indigenous land law. You can check us out and get all our contact details at murrawalaw.com.au.
Too deadly. Thank you very much, Fern. Look, fantastic. Always good to catch up with you. Big shout out to the girls there at Murra Law. And we'll talk soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Trev.
Hey, good day. Beautiful yarn there, Fern Newcombe, with Murra Law, solicitor there at Murra Law. And the statement is every human has rights, and the Queensland Human Rights Month 2020. That was our yarn today. Fantastic. Have your say here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416.
Mob, this is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Station Radio Station here in Cairns, as BBM Bumbleberry Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Liz Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that, daily number 1-800-422-416. Now, 3.5 million Aussie women driving Australia towards a cervical cancer-free future. That's a fantastic goal, and we're going to catch up a yarn with Associate Professor Lisa Wapp, Senior Research Fellow at the ANU, Australian National University. On the line, Professor Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, Trevor. How are you going?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, a fantastic goal to work towards driving Australia a cervical cancer-free future. I'm thinking more so the best tool we got in that goal is screening, yep?
Yeah, for sure. It's one of our most important ways of fighting against cervical cancer, and one of the ways that we will achieve elimination in this country.
Oh, fantastic. So are we leading the way in regard to achieving this on the globe?
Absolutely. Australia has led the way in terms of driving down incidence rates of cervical cancer for women in Australia, mostly through the cervical screening program, although we also offer the HPV vaccination program to our adolescents in their first year of high school. So that's also another important factor. And while we're doing really well in Australia, we also have some inequities, and they're the focus that we need to work on now. So that includes working with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women, as well as people who live in remote areas and you know, highly disadvantaged areas as well.
So why is there a gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous women in this department?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question, and I think it's a system failure. What we've seen is a national program that's been able to achieve major success for most Australian women, but not for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women. It's just not good enough. So we need to really make sure we focus on attending to these inequities. And with a new screening program, there's options of self-collection, which is an important part. But I think providing culturally safe care,
yes,
Booking with women, letting women have agency and control over their bodies is a really important thing. And really just kind of having a yarn about it. We talk a lot about breast screening communities, mm-hmm. but we don't talk a lot about cervical screening because we can get shame, we get busy, we got kids. And so I think, you know, prioritising ourselves is a way of prioritising our families. And I think that that's one way that we can do that as a community, but also we need women, the system to work with women,
yes,
to really make sure we can drive down these inequities.
And I suppose closing that gap, First Nation health organisations need to be at the table, front and centre, yep.
Front and centre and leading the way, absolutely.
So what is AIHW doing in regards to engaging with First Nation women as such?
Yeah, so that's a good question and probably one for them, but I think what we know is that AHW are responsible for reporting the performance indicators of the National Cervical Screening Program, and that sounds all very boring, except that they are really important in making sure the program works for the community.
Yes.
And at the moment, they're unable to measure screening rates for Indigenous women because of long-standing issues with the pathology report form. There's been a lot of work done this year because of COVID, and NACHO has done an amazing job in leading the way in trying to make sure the pathology sector come to the table. And so there's some really good news stories around that, and I think in the next few years we'll start to see the program and AHW reporting for the first time Indigenous participation rates. But the important thing, Trevor, I guess, is what we can see is that the outcomes for our mob are not as good as they can be.
Yes.
So this is one thing we are in control of in a year that we've had very little control. We can actually do this together.
Well, the phrase I always use is, we don't have to be sick to get better.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
When should we talked about screening, which is the best tool we got in regard to achieving that goal towards a cervical cancer-free future. When should women get a screening?
Yeah, so basically, if you're a woman aged 25 to 74 years of age, you're invited to screen every 5 years. So it used to be every 2 years. So now the test, because the technology is so much better, we can actually move to every 5 years. And trust me, that's good news.
Yes.
You don't have to do it as frequently. And there's also that option I told you about. So if you're aged over 30, you've never participated in screening, or you haven't participated in a long time, and you can talk to your doctor, and they may be the option of doing the test yourself. So you can collect it yourself, which might help some women get over the line to actually participate, which is really great. And I'd just recommend that, you know, you can take someone in with you.
Yes.
For 5 minutes of feeling uncomfortable, it can give you 5 years of peace of mind. And you can go to your local health service, talk to your GP, go up to the local AMS, and just chat with them about it. They want to help you get through this, and it is possible if we all just do that little test,
yes,
every 5 years.
I suppose medical staff along the journey, the process, need to be open mind and full of good spirit and welcoming as well, you know, to soothe the patient's mind and spirit, so to speak, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. And I think it's really about understanding that, you know, not everyone's the same. This is quite can be quite, you know, invasive for some women. It can be a bit scary. And so having a place that's private, secure to have the conversation so someone can make a really informed decision is definitely the way to go. And I've spent a lot of, you know, the...
Take me back to the old Yarra Ranges. That's where my heart will always be. Take me back to the old Yarra Ranges. In a land of tropical scenery. As we walk through the fields of Telbunji River flows. Oh, that's where.
Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it. Strap on. Just leave me alone.
out of petrol, and I was just on my way home. I didn't worry about the prickles in the sand when I was chased by Walker Dutchie Maine.
To Delhi, Kadachi Man, Atawana Band here on your Delhi program, National Talk Black. Give the Murray call, let's have a yarn, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, you can text the brother 0457140550. And our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS. We're housed at the First Nation Radio Station in Cairns, BBM Bumper Bit Media 98.7 FM. I want to give a big shout out to Samantha over there in WA, a beautiful elderly lady who called in and said that she loves listening to the show. So, big shout out. She has heart conditions, and thinking of her and hope she's well and enjoying the music and the yarns here on National Talk Black. Have your say, your mob, 1-800-422-416. Shake your hips. Let's go to Torres Strait Hula with Uncle Seaman Dan.
Way up north among the islands, way up in the Coral Sea, things always go together, the mill sisters and memories. Listen, plays the ukulele, Ina taps the tambourine, with Peter's guitar all together, they sing island harmonies. Hello, Cocky, is how they tune the ukulele. It just might be perfect island harmony, making me smile with the island style. Singing the songs we love to sing along, doing a Torres Strait hula, each one a story to tell, the beauty of music in motion, and that sweet, sweet frangipani smell. Cesar, Ina and Rita, swaying as they sing along, from TI to Sydney and Europe, traveling with a smile and a song. Hello, Cocky, is how they tune the ukulele. It just might be perfect island harmony, making me smile with the island style. the Monday Islands, way up in the Coral Sea. Two things always go together, the Mill Sisters and memories. Hello, Corky, is how they tune the ukulele. It just might be perfect island harmony, making me smile with the island style. Singing the songs we love to sing along. I blue.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on our National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7.
I remember the day.
What's good? Shout out to the homie DJ Darren on this one. Had to get Naka, Jagger RZA. Let's go. Feeling good right now. Titties, First Nations. Let's go. Can never claim to keep a gangster, no need to prove it. Every minute, every second of the way needs a movement. We solid, we do it, we did it, we go. So fresh, I think the English is my second language. But no, I'm serving for them land rights, power to the people. Shoot that go in a winner, so remain equal. Ha, and they ain't gotta kill my vibe. But real, recognize real when the truth cries. Hey. One for them land rights, two, make him vibe more. All around the world, now report to the dance floor. One for them land rights, two, make him vibe more. All around the world, now report to the dance floor.
I let go.
Resume, ticking off the meter, straight to the dance floor, Shauka Siva. They realize that we're vibing with indigo, capitalize, so now we're hitting the centerfold. Anecdote, visualize I'm making him panico. Bucket up a last ride, wrap it again and go. Sicky, yeah, let's make him wilder with that poly good shoulder shrug, test my style.
Let's go.
Yeah, remix version NNA here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say. Your mob 1-800-422-416 is the number you need to call. Yarnum with yours truly, Trevor Tim Trinity Trevor Murray from Macquarie, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumblebee Media 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Big shout out to the team down there. Hope you're well. They're housed at their Beamer office, Brisbane Digital Media Association. And big shout out to those guys as well and all their First Nation Black radio stations around the country. A fantastic Deadly Black Network. Have you say your mob? Yana Strong, 1-800-422-416. Now the Sydney Morning Herald states there's no new COVID-19 cases as fresh infection linked to overseas strain. There were no additional cases reported in New South Wales on Friday, as the health minister said an infection in a quarantine hotel worker had likely come from overseas. There were no additional coronavirus cases reported in New South Wales on Friday, as the health minister said an infection quarantine worker, which sparked alarm on Thursday, had likely come from overseas, and New South Wales broke its 26-day streak of no local transmissions on Thursday when a case was identified in a woman from Minto in Sydney's southwest who worked as a cleaner at the quarantine hotel in the CBD. The woman worked at Darling Harbour's Novotel Hotel, a quarantine hotel, and the nearby Ibis Hotel last week. Both hotels are owned by Accor and share staff. Genomic sequences is underway to determine if the case is linked to a traveller quarantine at the Novotel or is evidence of ongoing community transmission southwest Sydney. Health Minister Brad Hazzard said Friday early results indicated the infection was likely not acquired locally. The virus is not part of a local transmitted virus. It appears it has come from overseas, he says. So that's good news, but we should not be lackadaisical. We still have the pandemic about, and so we need to just abide by the rules and stay safe and constantly cough into your hands and constantly cough into your elbows and wash your hands constantly. Yes. Let's go to Solid Rock. David Hudson, do enjoy. Deadly track there, Solid Rock. David Hudson, DNH, dark and handsome, he liked to call himself. Hope you're well, my brother. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416. Call that number, yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM, Bumbleberry Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the country, thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. So have your say, yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416. All right, we're going to catch up a yarn there with Deadly Sister, Florence Drummond. And look, it's fantastic, great, deadly news. Indigenous CEO recognised in Global Women in Mining list. From a machine operator to CEO, Florence Drummond has found global recognition listed in this year's Women in Mining, UK's 100 Global Inspiration Women in Mining. How deadly are you, my sister? You there? Hello. Not there. We'll try and catch up with the Deadly Sister, find out what's going on here, pressing wrong buttons. But Murray is a professional. I want you to know that, too, Deadly. I'll catch up now with Florence. You there, Florence? Good morning.
Good morning.
How deadly are you, sister? Sorry. How deadly are you? Shut up.
You know.
You know. That's how I roll. Before we start, sister, let the mob know who you mob were you from, sis.
So I'm a Dharawa Butati woman from, born and raised on TI.
Yes.
But currently in Perth, over here on Noongar country.
All right, yeah. Fantastic. Mm. Too deadly. Now, stated here, the intro was from machine operator to CEO. Look, congratulations, like I said once again, global recognition listed in this year's Women in Mining, UK's 100 Global Inspiration Women in Mining. Also co-founder and CEO of Ewimbra, and that's Indigenous Women in Mining and Resources Australia. So leading from the front and digging at the top, so to speak, partner punt.
Pretty much, hey. Like, you know, it's been such a growth period, and it's just so deadly as well. Like, one of the first, I'm going to say the first Indigenous women recognised in these awards at a global level.
Yes.
So they've had, like, so it was established in 2013.
Yes.
They've had four rotations of it already. So there's 400 women, no one Indigenous. So it's so such a blessing to make sure that we're there, you know?
And when you started as a machine operator, the vision wasn't that, was it?
No. Definitely wasn't that.
Go a mile, see a mile.
Oh, my gosh.
Today, drive this machinery. Tomorrow, the world.
No, so good, though. It's so good. Like, I've been so blessed, like, you know, my whole journey. Like,
yes.
Ever since, like you said, when I first started as an operator, I didn't really care to be anything, really. I just wanted to go to work, you know, pay my bills and, you know, just do that stuff.
So where did it all start for you? How did you apply in the mining industry as such, and how did you get your tickets and all that? And to where you are today, please tell the story. Thanks, sister.
Yeah, definitely. So I was in Melbourne when I first applied. Okay, so take it all back. I was living in Melbourne. I went to TI for a holiday to visit my family. Mm. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I miss home so much. I have to come home. Like, but how am I going to afford to live at home?
Yes.
So I was looking through the Torres News and I saw this ad for trainee positions down in Weipa.
And how long ago was that? When was that, sorry?
7 years ago.
7 years ago, okay,
years ago, so 2013, maybe something like that.
Okay, yep.
So this is back then. So then I was like, okay, well, that's an opportunity for me to move home. So I moved back, like I went back to Melbourne after my holiday. I put in for a job through that application process. I didn't get nothing. Like I didn't get a position or anything, but I still kept my application in there.
Sure.
And then didn't have a job, but, you know, bought a caravan and a four-wheel drive and quit my job in Melbourne and just we moved up to Weipa.
Okay.
For 2 months, we had no jobs. I was working at the Albatross Hotel. There's a
represent Albatross.
Albatross Hotel, everyone know it.
True.
The Albie. But then after that, for 2 months, then we finally got into the intake there. And then, yeah, was there ever since, really, but was living at the caravan park for like a year and a half and all that kind of stuff. So it wasn't like all like a beautiful, amazing start. Like you'd have to rough it a bit. But,
As we do, yep. And so you got the call up to go work in mine. So with that, of course, you wouldn't have had your tickets as such. Did you get your tickets prior to apply for the job? Or once you're in the job, you got your tickets?
Well, different system there. So we only needed, I only needed at that time, like my driver's license.
Okay.
And then like you do training internally for, you know, to drive the trucks and all that kind of stuff. It's not so much like, you know, the coal industry where you need all these other certifications.
Yes.
It was quite simple.
Okay.
which was good.
So you started working there, driving machinery, and how'd you get from machinery into admin? How did you climb up the ladder? How'd that work?
Yeah, well, so when I was working there, you know, like you spend so much time with the people that you work with. So 12 hours a day, they become family, right?
They do.
And then like a lot of the people there, like mainly us mob, we weren't progressing into, you know, decision-making roles or, you know, any supervisor or manager or whatever role.
Mm-hmm. So no, like, well, no black faces at the top.
Nothing.
Shut up.
So then I was like, okay, well, surely Australia-wide, been mining forever, surely there's a support out there for Indigenous people.
On our country, mining on our country, yes.
Mm-hmm. So then I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to like go and create this Facebook group, see how you go. But no, it was good. Like, it started with zero, now got just over 6,000 people in our community.
Yes.
On Facebook. But of course, we got support, like biggest mob support everywhere. So, but you know, like in saying that as well, it is a challenging space for Indigenous people to be working in.
Yep.
You know, especially because.
And women too, my sister. Yeah, girls can do anything.
Now, that's it, you know, like, just look at my story. It's bloody incredible. But but no, it's always a challenging space, but so worth it. Like, we have to remain visible and, you know, vocal in our space so we can be part of those decision-making opportunities as well.
Lovely. So with that global recognition, listen, this year's Women in Mining, UK's 100 Global Inspiration Women in Mining, is there like a conference where you all get together, or is it Zoom in, or what happens here in the space that you've been listed, what happens there?
Yeah, so pretty much so London is like one of the biggest hubs for mining in the world.
Yes.
So we were supposed to go over to London this year to, you know, receive the honour, I suppose.
Yes, recognition,
Yeah, thank you.
But COVID-19 said no.
Yeah, COVID-19 said no, I think so.
Stop ours. Where you go? You're not going nowhere.
True, but so, no, next year, hopefully.
Lovely, okay. And in regard to the IMWIMRA, the Indigenous Women in Mining Resources Australia, you're the co-founder and CEO. So with that vehicle, what are you doing with that, my sister?
Yeah, so pretty much advocate for women that are in the industry, make sure that we're visible and we've got a voice there.
Yes.
So our first thing is to grow our network, so make sure that we're connected to all our mob around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there as well, we can start to realise, okay, well, here where you are now, what do you want to do and where do you want to go? Because automation is here right now, and most of our mob are in operational space.
Yes.
So what we're trying to do is make sure that, you know, they've got a pathway to either progress through the industry or come outside the business, or, you know, just whatever support they need.
Empowering.
And just to help them.
Mm. Fantastic. So probably a message going out there to all our sisters out there who are working in the mining industry. If you're not aware of IMWIMRA, then please go online, check it out, and become a member, is it?
Yeah, so we're just Facebook members for now, but then we'll do proper membership next year.
Good. Too Delhi, my sister. Mm. Look, leading from the front, congratulations once again. And it is a win for First Nation people in the industry,
a
win for all our beautiful women out there.
Deadly. Thank you so much, Paul. And yeah, shout out to everyone out there in industry. Stay safe. And thank you so much as well for the time this morning.
Too Delhi. You take care, Florence. Bye-bye, sis.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, well. Too Deadly. Beautiful yarn there. That's Florence Drummond, and was found global recognition and listed in this year's Women in Mining, UK's 100 Global Inspiration Women in Mining. So fantastic. She's also the co-founder and CEO of Indigenous Women in Mining Resources Australia. That's IWIMRA. So to all our beautiful women out there, sisters out there in the mining industry, if you're not a part of that network, then please get involved, and they can you can look at that as a vehicle helping you to boost yourself forward in the industry for your future aspirations. Too Deadly. Murray, going to sign off here, your mob. Thank you very much for your company. Back in the hot seat again tomorrow with that deadly number. In actual fact, Monday. There we are, back in the hot seat again on Monday. And that deadly number is 1-800-422-416. You can either text us 247-045-714-0550. And for all your keyboard warriors, do check out our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. See all our photos, all our yarns, and all our deadly stories. So there it is. Otherwise, your mob, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. More importantly, stay safe. Like I said, we are still in the pandemic. Let's not be laxy-daisy. Too Deadly.
Yo, man, do you really want to jam all night, man?
Yeah.
jam all night.
Chance.